So one of the things that didn't come up in the interview, but is worth mentioning, came up in the post, is, and this is self-serving, but is his was his connection to me while he was at GMI. You know, GMI was the my first multi-million dollar engagement at Decipher. So I babysat that thing all the way through. But what's interesting is I babysat probably 80% of the transactions that Decipher would do, just given the fact that we were doing enterprise-based sales.
And right.
The founder slash CEO needed to be a part of it. Jamie Plunkett was always a part of those conversations as well. And then when it came time to do the rollout, and this is what Ryan highlighted, you know, the CEO showed up to do the training, which is, pretty unorthodox. But you know, there's two aspects of that. One is I've always believed in staying close to the customer, and the best way to do that is to interact with them in training as well as when you lose a customer, you know, doing that postmortem or discussion on why they left, really important.
Yeah.
And those relationships have stuck with me. And similarly, one of the reasons that Ryan is so successful at recruiting, you think about the people that he's pulling out of major brands.
Yeah.
They're coming because of him and the culture that Zappi Store has established. And I loved how, you know, the keys being a fun culture, but at the same time, a get crap done culture.
Right. Yeah. It's one of the interesting aspects of being on like consulting side is, and I've thought about this a lot. I've worked in consulting in different industries, not market research previous to this, but I've worked in consulting in different industries. And there's this core issue of when you get a great client, you want to make it work, you do your absolute best, and there's a sale, there's constantly a sale into that process where you have to have that constant touch to re-pitch them on why your product is great. Because if they don't implement it, and if they don't use it, they'll turn around and say, your product doesn't work, or your process doesn't work, or the consulting advice that you gave me isn't good. When they have to go and implement it, you want to hold their hand and make sure that they get as much out of the value of what you're providing to them as you can.
Yeah.
Because you're carrying them through, a lot of times.
Take the point. The adoption can be stunted. And the reason why, if you uncover, you kind of keep peeling back the onion, at the heart of a transaction, a sale, you have an emotional need. So I want to sleep better at night because I know that the color blue is better than the color red for this particular widget, and the market adoption is going to be X percent higher.
Mm-hmm.
So it gets down to that, you know, solve my problem in a way that emotionally makes me feel better. I feel more secure in my job. I feel like I'm doing a better, whatever it makes me happy, whatever it is. And then once the transaction is completed, I think of it like once I get the Amazon box delivered at my doorstep, and then I get home and I unbox it and I take apart the stuff and I put it together, right? That emotional part is now gone. The benefit has been realized.
Yeah.
And now it's about shut up or put up, which gets to your point. And if they can't do the hard stuff, which is the implementation of what they just bought, then when it comes time for renewal or when it comes time to sell again, that door is going to be firmly closed. And that's what, you know, Ryan was talking about in terms of one of the value adds that they're, and one of the reasons I think that they're having low attrition with customers is because of that handholding and babysitting that they do to make sure that the products are rolled out correctly.
Yeah, and you have to take responsibility for that. It's very easy to walk away from that relationship saying, it's not that my product doesn't work, it's that you didn't use it. But you have to be the one to make that relationship work, to make that partnership work.
You know, shifting gears a little bit, Ryan has at his core an entrepreneur, right? I mean, that just came up at three different spots in the interview.
Yep.
It's no wonder that he was early days at Zappi Store and now has moved into that, applying those entrepreneurial tendencies or DNA to create Zappi Store to be what it is today.
Mm-hmm.
What did he say? 220-ish employees? That's a big freaking company to have been birthed in 2013.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I do think that as people thinking about starting their own thing, one of the contentious points, I would say, is you're a lot better off if you're an entrepreneur finding another entrepreneur that has recently started and then partnering, as opposed to trying to start up your own thing. Mm. You wind up creating a time machine effect where, you know, it can take 2 to 3 years to get a business off the ground. Whereas if you have two entrepreneurs or three entrepreneurs that work together, then it might just be 6 months, right? This whole sort of leverage on time comes into it. And then also the other part that I thought was interesting, was it a CTO or CIO who addresses his blind spots?
CTO, yeah.
CTO, right? So they're intentionally staffing, and that team has been intentionally put together in such a way that it's minimizing the blind spots mm-hmm. that exist from a market view and customer view and internal view perspective.
Yeah, and that came up with the conversation that we had with Merrill on his leadership side, where mm-hmm. We were discussing the question, do you maximize your strengths or do you minimize your weaknesses? Mm-hmm. And you know, there's a lot of advice out there, but one of the implementations that you just mentioned is you maximize your strengths, but you get somebody who's good at your weaknesses to be your partner and be your team member.
Yeah, that's it. Really good point. Really good point. It's all about being honest with yourself.
Yeah.
Self-reflective. The flat organization, I don't want to leave this point yet on the culture, right? And the way that they're making decisions is rare.
Personal responsibility.
Yep. Exactly. It's all about, it's almost like because you have that entrepreneurial bent at the top, they're layering it as opposed to more professional corporate bent. Which I would argue is maybe more hierarchical in nature and less trusting. You know, it is a culture that is, I'm going to make some decisions, empowered to do so, but then I'm going to live with the consequences. And if they're bad, oops, sorry, I might get fired. But I'm going to make decisions because I'm going to treat this like my thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And ownership is something that you talk about all the time here.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah. It resonates for me.
Yeah.
I was ready to get hired.
Yeah.
Just kidding, Ryan. So, but I'd be a really good cold caller.
Yeah.
The other thing that might be good to end on is talking about how he's seeing technology displace market research from a logistics perspective. We did our costing as primary market researchers. This goes back, Jamie and I, from 1996 to 2000. So we would log our hours against projects and what we were doing on them. And we found that about 96% of the time was just spent on the logistics of research, not the analytics.
Right.
Right. Just getting the data correct. Now, that has shifted over time, but so have time pressures. So what used to be 3 months now is delivered in 3 weeks or 3 days, which means that probably proportionally you still have about the same or similar
distribution of time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So thinking about where the opportunities are with partnering with customers, I think getting into that why is critical for being able to differentiate yourself from the broader market research. And so it isn't about being afraid of the systemization of the insights as much as it is about helping the interpretation and application of those insights to the organization.
Yeah, and this is something I feel so strongly about, like on research or anywhere else, just intellectually. For me, it's so interesting because how questions are a lot harder to answer than what questions. What questions are your data? How questions are your methodology? And your why questions, your true insights, if you're going to call yourself an insights firm and bring those insights to me, those why questions are even harder to answer. And it's something I really feel strongly about is don't be intellectually lazy. Don't lean back on your data so much, right? I don't mean to be harsh about it, but you know, I don't need someone to tell me that 52 is bigger than 48. I can see that with my eyes. I need you to go in there and use your creative intelligence, your abductive reasoning, your inductive reasoning to pull out that deeper insight. And that's what companies are really wanting.
You know, so in conclusion, when I think about opportunities for Zappi Store, piggybacking on the conversation with Edwin Wong yesterday at BuzzFeed, taking these prepackaged insight reports and then figuring out how to convert them into user stories so that the organization can internalize process and then continue to improve and humanize that data would be a big opportunity in this space.
And LinkedIn, yeah, not just everybody we're talking to.
And that might be one of the things that whether it's AI or machine learning, helps flesh out over time. But a really interesting conversation with Ryan Berry. Super excited. Ryan, thank you very much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. Everybody else, viewers, please leave comments below. Love to interact with you. If you'd like to be on the show or if you have ideas of people that should be on the show, we'd love to hear from you. Have a great day. Bye, everybody.
Bye.